Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, I'm taking a break and racing a car up in Laguna Seca. You guys are going to hear the best of the last, 11-plus years of the Adam Carolla Show. So maybe if you have a friend who wants to check it out, now's the time, because it's a, well, it's a cornucopia of laughs. So enjoy, and thanks for the support. First, bake me a wish. Win a shopping spree on bakemeawish.com. Perfect gourmet gift. Fresh from the oven, delivered to your door. They recently sent me a fruit-tastic gift basket. It was chock full of delicious fruit, as you know. I'm trying to keep it healthy as much as I can. We devoured it over here. I even brought some home. The kids devoured it. Bake Me a Wish birthday cakes, cupcakes, cheesecakes, and more. Guaranteed on-time nationwide delivery. Even ship overnight. Perfect for virtual birthdays and anniversary parties. Strawberry funfetti, rainbow, chocolate mousse torte, plus candy cakes like Butterfinger, Nestle Crunch, and Baby Ruth. They're so good. They send them here. Drew and I had a hit off one the other day. It was awesome. And personalized, too. They'll put whatever you you need on the top of it. And the cakes and gifts start at just $24.99. Visit bakemeawish.com. Use the code Adam. Save 15%. And follow them on Instagram and Twitter at bakemeawish.
Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for August 5th, 2020, the show where we highlight the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. Over 11 years of podcasting, and we're going to play you some of the greatest hits right here, right now. Gio and I are taking over the Adam Carolla Show feed while Adam and company take their well-deserved breaks. The show returns Tuesday, so till then, you got us. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
The only breaks we get are discounted brake pads for doing the show, which we really do appreciate.
Yeah, thank you very much. Safety is our number one priority. Now, Gio, we have a little bit of a special version of Carolla Classics planned for everybody during this quote-unquote dark week. So what do we got?
Well, we've played the first episode of the Adam Carolla Show many, many times. It's played in best of. It's played in all kinds of manners in this feed. And we always try to find a new way to play it. And I found a nice clip last time we played it. I thought we'd play it one more time for people who are new to the show and maybe haven't heard it before, or old-time listeners who just don't even remember what happened on that first episode. This is a nice little chunk from Adam Carolla Show, Adam Carolla Podcast, as was known then, Episode 1. Recorded February 22nd, 2009. Released February 23rd, 2009. It's just Adam Carolla and then former producer Donnie recording in the background. Check it out.
Tell you what, I'll do a couple of rants. I'll do a couple of just the kind of funny shit that you guys enjoy. And like I said, you put it up there, and I'll do it. We'll do it together, and we'll find it together. And we'll just go through it together. It's interesting. I really think we're on the brink of something. You know, when I was talking to Bill Simmons about this, and I did his podcast a couple of days back, and he was saying that cars are going to come with the internet real soon. And once that happens, I think that's going to be the breakthrough. And I think, you know, I went to a building in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard, in the middle of Los Angeles. It was 20 stories high, and it had a parking structure. And somebody had to pay for the security, and the guy who watered the plants in the lobby, and the guy who worked the floor buffer in the lobby, and all the sales, and all the studios, and the whole thing. And right now I'm sitting in my office, my kids are asleep, my dog's at my feet, and I'm sitting staring at the view of the city, and we're all alone, and the only overhead I have is the terracotta tile that's above me in the roof. And I think there's a way to do this, and I need your help. And again, I'm in it for the big picture, and I'm in it for the long term, so I don't need to make any money, not for a while. I want to build a community here. So, what do we talk about? Well, I got my made-up movie. I'll give you that, so it just doesn't sound like I'm just screaming and ranting out of a window here, like network. And I have just a couple of thoughts. First off, I took a shit today. And I don't know if you guys have this, but about every 155th shit I take doesn't smell like one of mine. You ever have that thing where you take a shit and you go, "Who shit was that? That wasn't one of mine. Was that one of mine? Did someone else's shit just come out of my ass? How'd that shit get in there? What'd I eat?" And you think to yourself, "Nah, same stuff I eat every day, and I eat different stuff every day. It's really like I just walked into a bathroom and somebody took a shit." And then there's a weird sort of perverse pleasure in it. It's like, I'm smelling someone else's shit and enjoying it. Yeah, I got you on a technicality. Came out of my ass. The other one, as it pertains to shitting, I won't go scat too long, but about every 183rd shit, I get the, "That smells like cat shit. What'd I do? I eat some kibble or some giblets or mouse? Why does it smell like cat shit?" You guys ever get that? Am I insane? Have you ever done that? You ever done that? Smells like a cat just shit in this toilet. I'll talk to Dr. Drew about it. I'll work that one out. The other thing I was thinking about today, I was at a kid's party. Well, first off, I got to play you something. Horrible gifts to get kids. Dr. Bruce, anyone who listens to Loveline long enough knows Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce got my kids, I could tell you what it is, or I could just blow into it. It's real funny, except for when you hear that shit going off all night and all goddamn day. Don't get kids gifts that make noise. No whistles, no bells, no drum kits. It's right up there with Silly String on the retarded gift buying registry. Really? You should be sued for doing that. And I've been hearing the... And by the way, it's not like the kids, and they got a harmonica too. It's not like I got John Popper in there blowing on that thing. It's just snot blowing through it, in and out, driving me nuts, driving my dog insane. Don't do it. Get him a stuffed animal. Get him a Batman outfit. Get him something from Thomas the Tank Engine. Get him a princess wand. Get him fucking anything, but something that makes noise. I'd rather get him a vibrator. Or strap-on, or a fucking loaded gun. Anything. Anything but a slide whistle. Or a bell. Or Silly String. I was at my buddy Donnie's party today, and there was a pirate. Speaking of kids. And it's funny seeing these guys, you know, because when you were a kid, they were heroes. Like, look at the princess. Look at the pirate. Now it's pathetic. Right? Because you know the guy. He's 41. He's been divorced 3 times. Shit obviously hasn't worked out because it's Sunday and he's getting $8 an hour to dress like a pirate at my buddy Donnie's kid's birthday party. And they wear the pirate outfit, and everyone always wears the whole outfit, but the part they cop out on is the shoes. You guys know what I'm talking about? Whenever they do anything, I don't care if it's a pirate, I don't care what they're dressing as, whether it's Shrek, a pirate, Batman, Superman, it's always the shoe part they cop out on. This pirate, his shoes had Velcro, 2 Velcro straps. I thought, really, you couldn't even go with laces? You couldn't even go with a pair of Chucks? Velcro? Velcro from 1489? Velcro? The shit NASA invented in 1979? Velcro? Really? But they were black. And that's where these people get their pass. I don't mean the guy was black. I mean the shoes were black. Although the princess was black. Which was confusing to my daughter, but I'm still waiting for her to ask. Thank God she didn't blurt out anything. But the point is, the guy had black, like, Reeboks on with the Velcro strap. And I thought, you know, if you get the right color, you'll get the pass. And that's the cop-out. Because it's not about the color, it's about the laces. Simply Safe. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, and lousy customer support. There's only one no-brainer in this industry, and that is Simply Safe. They've been with us for years now. They do a great product. Everyone here uses it. There's 2 eyes in there. Everything to protect your home, an arsenal of sensors and cameras for every room. windows and doors tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring day and night, ready to send a police, fire, or medical professionals. Set up in under an hour. Just peel and stick. The batteries last up to 10 years. No drilling, no pulling wires, no mess required. No contract, no pushy sales guys, hidden fees or fine print. Starts at just $15 a month. U.S. News and World Report named SimpliSafe the best overall home security of 2020. Right? Right. Okay, Dawson.
Head to SimpliSafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's SimpliSafe.com/Adam to make sure they know that our show sends you.
And that was the very first episode of the Adam Carolla podcast, ACS number one, recorded February of 2009. Now, Gio, what can you tell new listeners of how it went about that Adam left his radio show and started a podcast?
Yeah, well, he was on KLSX, which is a local Los Angeles station. He took over Howard Stern in 2006. The way that the corporate people decided to do it was have one guy on the West Coast, one guy in the Midwest, and one guy on the East Coast. And the East Coast guy was David Lee Roth. You can look up how that went if you don't remember. Adam Carolla, on the other hand, was extremely successful. I think he was in 11, 12, 13 markets at one point. Number one in Seattle, the smartest city, as he called it, and number one in Vegas, the dumbest city. But unfortunately, all they cared about was local ratings and stuff, which Adam was actually very popular in as well. But after 3 years, the station flipped formats, having nothing to do with their talent or their individual stations or even Adam. It was just simpler to have a robotic Jack FM take over and just have a pre-programmed playlist and have no humans program the radio station. So ratings would drop and money would drop, but revenue would increase because you're not paying anybody. So they're going to flip formats, and Adam decides that he has to keep doing the show some way because it's so important to the fans. And producer Donnie was telling him to do a podcast, unaware that the morning show actually was a podcast on iTunes for that whole entire 3 years, and it was ranked in the top 10. So it was already a podcast. And luckily, Mike Chaffee, the digital guy at the station, was the one running it. I was assisting him remotely, telling him like what to do as a fan. Like, I was the number one consumer of that podcast. So over a weekend, Mike Chaffee had to relearn HTML, and I helped him every step of the way, and they recorded this out there in Los Angeles. They posted it up Sunday night to right Monday morning, and it just blew up from there. Over 250,000 downloads immediately. I told them we're going to need a bigger boat, and we did. Bandwidth was through the roof, and the show just continued onward. Where were you when you first heard this episode? Did you hear this in 2009, or did you not hear it until you started over a year later?
I didn't hear it until I started over a year later. And
for new listeners who don't know.
Yeah, I jumped on in.
Where's Chris? I don't hear Chris in this clip. It's like Chris wasn't there yet.
I wasn't there yet, but the Adam Carolla podcast was an instant hit the first day, which is incredible.
And yeah, everybody on staff was expecting 30, 40,000 downloads because that's what they would get daily reliably for streaming numbers. But I was like, no, you have to look at the podcast numbers. And I was like, this is going to be 250,000 immediately. And I was coming up with all these creative ways to save money with bandwidth. It would have been crazy to implement a lot of them, like multiple media fire links that would keep posting a new one after the last one died. You wouldn't have wanted to do any of it. So Adam just ended up paying through the nose to give everybody a free show.
Yeah.
And we appreciate it.
Right, because he was still also under his CBS contract, so he couldn't...
He could not earn any money or monetize the podcast in any way, and he had to pay just all the bandwidth straight out of his bank account.
That's correct.
And it was very expensive, especially back in 2009, because, you know, podcasting did exist as a medium. He had already been doing it for 3 years as a radio show. The actual format existed a couple of years before that, like 2003, 2004-ish, but it hadn't really caught on in any big way. And this is the first time that it happened, and this independent guy went from releasing nothing on his own to releasing this show for free, and everybody wanted to hear it. And then as soon as everybody wanted to hear it, the media blew up, there were stories, added millions and millions of downloads. It, you know, eventually became a world record holder for the show itself, but this episode alone, I can't imagine it was downloaded any times fewer than 2 million that first week.
Right.
So much so that the link had to be taken down eventually and then reposted.
And then, let's get going with another episode. A few days later, he invited Dave Damaschek, who we all know, he co-hosts Good Sports, that is on the tail end of most Adam Carolla shows throughout the week. But he was also one of Adam's co-hosts back in the radio show, and a writer on The Man Show. So Adam's known him for a long time, and Adam invited him on just days later.
Yeah, Good Sports is kind of an evolution because he was the sports guy on the 2006 Adam Carolla Morning Show. And he was there for the entire year. So this first week of podcasting, it was Adam on the first episode. Dr. Drew came on for the second episode, Adam's first radio partner, aside from Kimmel, of course. Then he had Teresa and Brian on, who were the news girl and sound effects guy, who Brian's still on the show. Teresa comes on all the time. And then on episode 4, Dave Damashek, the former sports guy. This is February 25th, 2009, released the following day. Adam and Dave talk about Nick Cage and how he could go off the rails and how they would like him to do it in exactly specific ways. Check it out.
But let's talk about this, because there's an old school guy and there's a new school guy. And actually, I'm going to try to tie this into a concept that Dr. Drew had, which is, you know, he's made like three jokes and had 5 points in the 15 years I've known him. And one of his points,
my kind of guy,
one of his points is that Pam Anderson is a female impersonator. That someone like Pam Anderson has a fetish about being a female. I just turned on Entertainment Tonight or TMZ or whatever a few days ago and saw her strutting down the catwalk and, you know, having the shimmery makeup put on her chest between her cleavage and then putting on the stripper lucite heels and bounce down the catwalk in a tight one piece with her ass hanging out. And I realized, first off, this is a 42-year-old mother at this point, mother of a few, I guess. This woman has a disease. This woman has a fetish. Mm-hmm. She's a female impersonator. We can all wrap our minds around the guy who wants to become a chick. How about the chick who wants to become more of a chick? We also understand the chicks that are sort of male impersonators, the ones driving the Subaru Foresters and working at the pound. So there are female impersonators. I'm now starting to think about a male impersonator.
And he would be and Bonaducci would be the personification of that man?
He would be on the stamp if they had a post office. Yes. Yes, ironically, the mailman. This is going on all over the place. Mm-hmm. This is all the guys that are totally crazy about pro wrestling and the UFC and the guys who ride the hogs, who do nothing but curls at the gym, who shave their body, who wear vests made of suede with no shirt on underneath, and and go extra dude bro with other guys. Like, hey, dude, hey, back off, bro. You know what I mean?
And these
guys didn't exist 20 years ago.
And the odd thing about it is that there's an element of homoeroticism to the whole thing.
Well, it is, because A, you're telling me to back off, Brosif, except for you're not wearing a shirt, and you've shaved your chest.
Well, what about
and
that?
And you're getting mystic tan on me, and you're telling me, dude, back off, and I'm looking at your nipples, and there's no hair on them. So there's a weird thing. Now, there's a homoerotic component to it. Just like there is with everything. I mean, pro wrestling, there's a homo. Right? Nobody wants to see guys with skinny arms bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. We want to see big, tan, buff guys throwing each other around. And so there's always sort of been a homoerotic component to almost, you know, since the Roman gladiator days, I'm imagining. I mean, the fact that they're nude. By the way,
one of our modern players performed in the nude for our pleasure.
Nude and sword play are like, to me, I got want to keep on the opposite ends of the refrigerator. I don't want the sword. When the sword comes out, the junk goes in. That's my motto.
Well, that's why I mean, talk about unnecessary nudity and wrestling and such. The picture a couple of, what was that, about a year ago, Eastern Promises with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
The most bizarre, unnecessary nudity in movie history was, all right, fine, the premise is that they want to kill him, but did they have to put the hit? Whose idea was that? Was that Viggo working off the script kind of thing? Like, you know what, director, if I'm naked in this, it adds an element of vulnerability. And then he strangles the guy with I thought that was inappropriate. Choking the guy out with the wang, like a boa constrictor, wrapping around his neck.
let me spoiler alert. Let me tell you something else before I get back to my male on male impersonator theory here, which I'm quickly falling in love with.
Not only was Viggo Mortensen in one of the strangest sexual situations, guy on guy, but girl on guy in History of Violence.
I knew you were going there, yeah.
Because he was with Maria Bello, and this is a sort of action-y, thriller-y, suspense-y thing, and next thing you know, he's going down on her.
41 seconds into the movie.
He's
what?
Chomping
what
her box for a fortnight, 41 seconds in the movie, and I was with my wife, and I was doing that. I was starting to squirm, like, look, I'm making a popcorn run. I hope you're not expecting anything close to this. It was weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's something oddly... I've talked about that very scene with people, probably as a matter of fact you. There's something weirdly repellent about that scene, given how foxy she is. That Maria Bello is a looker.
She's foxy. He's, by the way, I would not let that chin anywhere near my box if I was a woman, because you could cut yourself. That thing's a weapon. His chin is a
weapon. Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah, what you want is a nice, soft kind of a... You want Albert... what's the director's...
Albert Brooks?
Oh, no, wait, I'm thinking of... who did Rear Window and all that?
Oh, Hitchcock, yeah.
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah, that's the kind of chin you want coming at your vag.
I've said this many times.
Not the Viggo chin.
Every one of these guys, every one of these A-list movie star fellas, the women, great range. You see some women, you think, oh, she's beautiful in the pictures. And then you see her in person, big disappointment. Right. On the other hand, people like women like Christina Applegate, you're like, yeah, she's a nice-looking woman. Then you see her in person and you swoon. But every A-list fella, a beautiful bastard.
Yeah.
Am I right? Why? No. Because they all have that unnaturally rigid chin.
It's all about the mouth.
No.
It's chin and the mouth. You got to focus on the mouth, too.
How about when Cruz came over to Kimmel's a couple of months ago?
It's so eerie how striking he is. I know. I wanted to make out with him, but I was really loaded. And you shouldn't show up at Kimmel's at 3:57 because I'd had a pony cake, a micro brew in me by then, and so did everyone else. But so Viggo Mortensen has the two most uncomfortable sexual scenes in the last 2 years of movie making, right?
Yeah, I
agree. So watch for the Maria Bello one and watch the other one where he chokes the guy out with his wang. But back to choking out with the wang, what about this male impersonator thing? Because again, the guys I grew up with who were really what I would call guys, top of the list, they love sports.
Mm-hmm.
They just love sports. They love contact sports the most, but they love sports, and they weren't very studious, and it wasn't about that sort of Hollywood comic book version, you know, riding the motorcycles and wearing leather jackets and stuff. It wasn't about that. It was sports, it was booze, and these guys were pussy hounds. But they never would have shaved their chest or sprayed themselves gold or bronze because it didn't make sense
to
them.
Well, specifically with the shaving, I've talked about this a bit over the last few months. It's interesting. Is it a generational thing? And I'm just a couple of years younger than you, but I feel like at the age of 38, I am right at that cutoff point. I'm born in 1970. I feel like if you're born in 1972... I think every guy from 72 on shaves their body. I think that's just understood. And I feel now like the weirdo who walks around with my fur.
Well, it's as we've said and as I've said, it's my lawyer theory, which is I don't need a lawyer except for the only reason I need a lawyer is because other people have lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I defend myself with all these assholes with their lawyers? I have to have my own representation. You don't have to shave your back or your chest unless you're at a beach filled with these fags that shave their backs and chests, and now you have to do it because you look like you got a bird's nest coming out of the back of your trunks. So it's an equivalent thing. It really is. You know what it is? It's whitening your teeth.
Yeah.
You watch those movies and sitcoms and stuff from the 70s, people didn't have white teeth. But if you go and you do The Tonight Show, and Leno had his teeth whitened, and you're sitting next to Paris Hilton, and she had her teeth whitened, and you're sitting in between the two of them, guess who needs to have their teeth whitened? You're going to look like a shit sandwich.
I know, but now you're making me feel really bad because I have gone to the beach in the last year or two, and I'm not going to clean off my chest. What am I going to do? And yet I feel that stink eye. It is a depressing moment when you're on a Southern California beach and you still have in your brain the notion that, like, yeah, look at some good-looking girls over there in their bikinis. They're probably about 23, 24. And you feel them look at you for a second, and they're not looking at you as a potential mate. They're looking at you as a disgusting old man. Look right. at that beast walking out on the beach. Get him out of here. I'm going to vomit now. That's
depressing. Hey, Sigmund, what time is it?
But, you know, and then conversely, I resent the shaving guys who clearly are working out way too much. But then I also resent guys like Johnny Depp and Brad Pitt who mm-hmm. who go out of their way clearly. It's the only reason they're doing it is to thumb their noses at the likes of you and me. They get that they grow their hair long and greasy, and they get weird facial hair, and they wear weird little hats on their heads. And yeah. the only reason they're possibly doing it is to say, "See, I can make myself as ugly as I possibly can, and I can have every one of them whenever I want to."
There's nothing. Yes, I could literally take hippo shit and just smear it all over my face like Predator. And I'd still get laid more than you would, Carolla and Damashek. There's nothing. My face is so beautiful. My body is so sculpted that there's really nothing I can do. As a matter of fact, when I frump it up, I'm even more endearing. I even get laid more. I grow a crazy, crazy Dan Haggerty beard. I stop shaving. I stop cutting my hair. I stop essentially all grooming and maintenance. Still, I will happily get laid when you're home
jerks.
Masturbating and
unbelievable.
Crying. I know. There is a weird thing. Women, by the way, doesn't work that way. If you want to go completely south and stop plucking and stop shaving and stop applying makeup, we will stop trying to F you.
Yeah, good luck.
We can be stopped. But I do agree the Pitts and these two are the kings, by the way. I do believe that Pitt and Depp.
McConaughey works out all the time, and I'm assuming shaves himself, but makes a point of announcing how he doesn't shower very often. Mm-hmm. So he also fits into that group a little bit, I think.
It is a weird, like, how many blowhard hats can you wear where you don't care what people think, you like playing your bongos and smoking weed in the middle of the night, you do your own thing, you play by your own rules, but you're shaving your chest and taking your shirt off and running right down Paparazzi Row right in front of the Ivy. Like, what the fuck? Like, well, which is it? Do you care or do you not care? Because if you don't care, put on a hoodie.
Right, yeah. Go all the way. Do like Depp. Depp lives in, I don't know where. I don't think he lives in the U.S.
He's in France.
Is that where he is? See?
Yeah.
So that's commitment.
Right.
McConaughey's having it both ways. He's the worst of them all, maybe.
He is a lot of nothing. I got to be honest with you. That is, he is the character that he plays, that sort of dim bulb.
Dazed and Confused, the high watermark of his career, right? That little turn in that picture is great.
I think Kate Hudson and his arc could probably follow it. It's exactly the same, as a matter of fact. Dazed and Confused came out somewhere in the neighborhood of Almost Famous, mm-hmm. maybe a couple years earlier, but right about that time.
Sure.
It was a big ensemble cast. They weren't carrying the film. They played a great role in a great film, but had a limited role in a great film. And then as soon as they went off on their own, that's when the abortions began. And the slaughter's not stopped, by the way. And Hollywood is so goddamn retarded that they give Kate Hudson and this guy movie after movie after movie. And speaking of this, Nick Cage, by the way, has completely slipped off the deep end.
Yeah, right, yeah. A couple things. First of all, with Kate Hudson. Kate Hudson is tied with Cameron Diaz, I think, for looking the best in a single picture, but that's the only place you want to see her. I think Kate Hudson is attractive,
yes.
But she is inordinately foxy in Almost Famous compared to how she normally looks. Same as Cameron Diaz in The Mask. She's a spectacular beauty, and that's still attractive otherwise,
yeah.
But really off the charts there. The other thing with the idea of, you know, McConaughey and Kate Hudson and Nick Cage continually getting these shots and with these lousy movies that do middling at the box office debunks the whole idea of that of the show Entourage, your beloved Entourage, and Adrian Grenier.
Right.
He makes one bad movie, he's done. Hollywood won't take a meeting with him.
Yes,
all of a sudden,
according to that measure, Cage would have been thrown. I mean, he'd be putting on roofs in Glendale right now. And that would have been after The Wicker Man. That would have been after Captain Corelli and his right. mandolin. That not even the movies that came and went so fast nobody remembers them. Like Next, his new one, Knowing, is coming out. It's crazy. I don't know how they even work these things. I think his new one's called Knowing. He knows something. Next was a guy who could... Oh, by the way, in Next, he played like Vegas Reams or something. Another one of these crazy fucking... It's one of these names. Gone in 60 seconds. I mean, he really needs to be checked for syphilis. I think it's eating his brain. I really do think it's eating his brain. And I think what happens is you get so insulated, you become like Elvis in his last months. No one will intervene and go, listen, you can't be mixing all these pills and you're morbidly obese.
Is that really what happens? Because it's hard to figure that Nicolas Cage, did he win an Academy Award? I feel like he did. I know he's been nominated.
I watched Academy Awards last Sunday, and they did that thing of Best Leading Men, that montage, and there was a shot of Nick Cage holding the statue above his head.
From the movie with Cher, Great Italian
No,
York,
I think
Italian
he got it from
family,
leaving
right?
Las Vegas, but maybe that's
Moonstruck
just me.
Moonstruck is what I'm thinking of. But anyway, yeah.
I think Cher got it and should give it back for that. But by the way, but it was so crazy because it's like this, I imagine it's like a player seeing his coach in his playing days or something. I was like freaked out. I was like, oh, that's right. That guy used to act. He was an actor. That's right. Because his last 8 to 14 films have not been bad. They've been horrific. They've been embarrassingly bad. And I thought to myself, I thought, if that Oscar that he got in 1998 or 96 or whenever, that Leaving Las Vegas 99, whatever, if that thing were made of chocolate and he had to take a bite out of it for every piece of shit he's made since then, it'd be gone. Right? There'd just be the base.
Yeah.
He'd be licking the base. Because, I mean, you go through the Next, and you go through the Wicker Man, and you go through the Ghost Rider and all this stuff.
Oh, Ghost Rider. Oh, well, listen, you know, maybe, I got to tell you.
Huh? Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh, that was it.
What year is that?
I'm going to go with 97.
98, for the hell of it. It's the 95. Oh, wow. Oh, Jesus. Nick, we're going on 15 years, brother.
All right, well, so he's still at a peak there, obviously, wins that. I blame, you know who I blame, Ace? I always say, it's the same thing, you know, it's easy to point the finger elsewhere, but you know who I blame for Nick Cage's demise? I blame the man in the mirror, and I blame Adam Carolla as well, because we loved Face Off, and once that's a box office smash, maybe he thinks, all right, I can do this sort of hooey and applesauce and make a career of it.
Hooey and applesauce. Oh, listen, Bangkok Dangerous.
Bangkok Dangerous.
We forgot about that one.
Did that play in the States?
Next, yes. Ghost Rider, The Wicker Man. Oh, my God. The Weatherman, Lord of War, The National Treasure, Matchstick Men. Wow.
That one's all right. Yeah, all that right. one's not terrible. A lot of these
Wind
movies,
talkers.
I legitimately barely ring a bell for me.
The Family Man.
Oh, is that the one with Taya Leone?
Yeah. He went down on her. Oh, no, wait a minute. Something else. Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Eyes.
Oh, that was a bad one.
And then we're getting back to Face Off.
See, that's where it, what did I say? It goes back to Face Off.
But listen.
With our validation, he felt it was all right to pursue that, to go down this very foolish path.
He wins the Academy Award for Leaving Las Vegas, and then his next film is The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, Snake Eyes, and so on and so forth. You want to talk about a departure. And by the way, what's in the pipeline for Nick Cage? Kick-Ass. Astro Boy and G-Force.
Well, you know, all the talk about Mickey Rourke being back now and being relevant again, it seems as though Nick Cage is the next in store for a little modification of his career, right? Resurrection time.
I'd like to see a full sort of Jan Michael Vincent, Gary Busey type meltdown before the resurrection.
You know right. All right, I'm in for it.
Something that we could enjoy via dashboard cam. Maybe mounted on a Malibu squad car, you know what I mean? from our comfortable chairs watching TMZ.
Wouldn't that be the height of irony if he, actually, you say along the lines of Busey, what if he got into such a horrific accident that he actually did have to have face replacement surgery?
Had his face pulled off and removed with John Travolta's.
Yeah. If he's going to do it, if that happens to you, Nick Cage, because you're surely listening right now, go all the way. Do something for the fans. If they're going to have to reconstruct your face, do it with Travolta.
Lines galore. Love these guys. Huge summer scorcher sale is happening right now. Up to 50% off of everything. I use these guys. Drew uses these guys. They're in our edit bay at the other shop. They're at my home. They have the electronic blinds now. I mean, it's really nice. It keeps the heat out, too, man. I mean, it's a big difference how much heat it keeps out. Your furniture doesn't get all sunblasted and faded, or the rug, or God forbid, the dog, if they don't stay in one place long enough. Over 2 million windows covered, 100% custom window treatments online, made to your exact measurements. And they have a new Build a Blind tool, lets you create custom window treatments and see exactly what they're going to look like before you buy. Let's do this. Treat yourself at blindsgalore.com. Right, Dawson?
BlindsGalore.com makes it easy to get the designer blinds and shades you've always wanted without the designer price tag, especially during their huge summer scorcher event when everything is 50% off. Visit BlindsGalore.com today and let them know Adam sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
And that was Adam and Dave Damashek back in 2009 with some Nick
Wanting
Cage.
Wanting Nick to actually do a literal face-off.
Right.
With Travolta.
Premonition.
Going on his crime spree.
Yeah. And we always say we love them together, and they obviously love each other. Adam's been having him on the podcast since then. He still comes on multiple times a week. So,
if you've never seen the Basic Cable commentary, or heard it for that matter, the movie Roadhouse, they did a commentary track you can buy independently, sync it up with the movie. Very simple. It's one of the funniest life experiences you'll ever have. Do not miss it.
Agreed. Basic Cable commentary, Roadhouse.
Number one.
All right, but Damashek is not the only sports guy in Adam's life. Obviously, Jimmy is one of them. And Bill Simmons. Adam's on him for a long time.
Two-time and Dave with Bill. On Adam Carolla Show, Episode 5, the next sports guy came on the very next recording, the very next day. Bill Simmons was famous for coming on the morning show and doing Basic Cable Classics, the segment they invented that was a precursor to full commentary tracks, where Adam and Bill would break down some old movie, which is kind of Bill's bread and butter, and then Adam's, of course, the funniest element. You combine the two, and it's just great. And so Bill comes on, and Adam pitches him on some TV and movie ideas. And this is from Episode 5, February 26, 2009, released the following day. Adam and Bill Simmons, check it out.
Came up with a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to pitch you a couple TV ideas and a couple of feature ideas. But
better than Brokeback Secret Admirer?
On a par. Nothing could be better. I'm going for a tie. How about this for an idea?
Okay.
We make an independent film, and we fill it full of all the crap that people love about these precious independent films. You know, we have a gay couple. It's Little Miss Sunshine. Meets all the stuff that wins at the Independent Spirit Awards and stuff every year, and then we fake the death of the lead actor, died of AIDS.
Oh, what
now? About- he's a shoo-in for this is our he's a shoo-in, except for eventually he's going to have to come back. I mean, if you made a movie about a gay couple or whatever, and the lead character, the actual actor, died of AIDS, he would win the Oscar for sure that year, right?
Why couldn't you go even further and say that there was a vicious strain of avian bird flu and everybody in the set died?
All right, we'll take
it. Then you're guaranteeing best movie, best actor, best supporting actor. Everybody's dead. Let's vote for that movie.
Right. It gets best special effects and has an $800,000 budget to just shoot it in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
All right, everyone died of
bird flu. Yeah, right
in
the last day, there's bird flu and it wiped out the cast.
Yeah, it'll be like the Marshall football team.
I like
do
that.
Do it that way.
Okay.
All right, let me pitch you another gay-related movie.
Oh, please do.
Are you ready? Now, picture this.
Yeah.
It's San Francisco. We're in the Bay Area. And there's a school for gays. Not to teach you how to be gay, but because a couple of kids got picked on. There were some hate crimes going on in Oakland. They made a little charter school for the gay kids. It's believable.
Not
they're
only is
they're
it,
progressive.
Not only is it believable, I wouldn't be shocked if this school didn't exist already.
Okay, well, let's just say it does.
Okay.
And it's a great, of course, it's a great school. No violence. You know, everybody plays the viola. I mean, high marks, high test scores. No graffiti, thank you. Everyone recycles.
Is it a high school?
Yeah, it's a high school
for
the gays.
So it's the Harvey Milk High School.
Right, just Memorial High, just one of the gays. Shia LaBeouf is a tough kid from the wrong side of the track.
Shia.
He's perfect for this. He's got juice, by the way. He could get this made. All right. He plays sort of that rebel without a cause, tough guy character that he played from the super crappy last Raiders of the Ark installment. He's
right.
A tough kid. Wrong side of the tracks. His parents, single mom, sends him to the school for gays because she wants him to get a good education.
She just heard the teachers were good.
The test scores are off the charts. Everyone knows it's a great school.
Yeah.
And they can't test for gay.
No.
It's not like they get a 15-year-old freshman and they go, let's see you suck cock. No, they just have to take your word for it, right? I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no test.
So you're saying it's basically like that Sandler Kevin James movie.
Yeah.
Crossed with a high school.
Right, but wait.
Okay.
Oh, but wait. So, of course, he hates it because he's a tough kid from the wrong side of the tracks, but his mom, single mom, says it's either that or the military academy.
Yeah, and you
because he's
do
out
that.
Of control.
Right.
So he has to. So it's the old fish out of water thing where he has to gay it up and fade up, even though he's a tough kid. Yeah, it's like the Sandler thing.
Little Jack Tripper, too.
Yeah, little Jack Tripper mixed in. Now, here's where it takes a twist. Mm. Dakota Fanning. Also.
Again.
I like her work. Also, from an impoverished family.
Okay.
Wrong side of the track. Her dad says, you got to not only gay it up, but you got to pretend to be a dude. Because it's an all-boys gay school.
Shades of just one of the guys.
Yeah. She binds her breasts. She does the whole, gets her hair cut off short.
Right.
Now she's at the all-gay school with Shia LaBeouf. But they find they're attracted to each other.
Nice.
And it's weird because Shia's like, what's going on? I'm having feelings.
Shades of Fast Break.
Yeah. What happened at Fast Break?
Fast Break, Gabe Kaplan, basketball comedy. There was a girl on the team who they made believe was a guy.
Oh.
And the power forward became attracted
for
to
my
her.
Money, top five Gabe Kaplan movies, by the way, Fast Break. Maybe 10. I don't
Maybe also top one since it was the only one. Yeah.
Okay. So Shia LaBeouf, who's kind of a homophobe and looks himself as a real man's man, finds himself like there's that scene where she drops her books and bends over to get, he finds himself staring at her ass and then does that, what the hell? What's going on? He can't, because the pheromones have taken over. And she, of course, is attracted to Shia LaBeouf, but he can't say anything. He has to keep pretending how gay he is.
I got to interject here.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you do Dakota. I think you go older with somebody who looks young, like the girl from Juno.
Lauren Holly.
No, Juno.
Oh, okay.
Ellen Page.
Mm-hmm.
You get Juno.
Good. I'm
then
writing.
You could have the sex scene where they finally unleash their attraction.
Yeah.
And Shia rolls her over and does the Heath Ledger, the spits on the hand. like he's going to go anal on her.
Right.
But doesn't realize it's a chick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
And he's kind of like a little disappointed.
And for a minute he pauses. He's got that look. He gives that look you give when you take a swig out of something that when you're a kid, something would be in the Tupperware jug in the fridge and you thought it was OJ and you take a swig and it was milk and you have that quick face where it's like,
right.
Huh? And then you go, huh, okay.
Right.
All right, there's that moment of what the, and then, okay, all right.
Or when you're a 12-year-old at a wedding and you grab a drink and you don't realize it's a vodka tonic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
All right, so this is just one of the gays.
I like it.
All right.
I love that movie and it could go in a lot of directions. I like Harvey Milk Memorial High.
Yeah, it's all solid, very timely.
I also think you have a teacher maybe make a move on Shia.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then, hey, if you want an A in this class,
right.
You better learn how to play the game.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like
and
that's, that.
And he punches him and just knocks him out. That's his street, streetwise instincts coming out.
Quick tangent, though.
Mm.
How come we never hear the right side of the tracks?
Yeah, it's always the wrong side of the tracks.
Because I feel like I was born on the right side of the tracks.
Yeah, I was born on the tracks.
You were born in the middle of the tracks.
I was better be off them. All right, let me give you this one. I think you're going to like this one. This one is from the mind of Ashton Kutcher. I've decided just to side at everything. I'm going to start every pitch with, this was Ashton Kutcher's idea.
Or you could call it an Ashton Kutcher joint.
Yeah, yeah. Good, good. Ashton Kutcher's behind this. He thought of this. Every fucking pitch I make in this town, I'm just going to say Ashton Kutcher told me to say this.
It doesn't bother you that he's now a volunteer football coach at Harvard-Westlake?
No. Okay. It's the only thing I like about him.
Okay.
All right. This one is called Maid of Dishonor, and we get Patrick Dempsey back on board with this. And it's one of those crappy Dane Cook sort of premises where he is the guy who's hired by the brides to be. He's hired as the long-lost relative or brother or something of the bachelor to go to the bachelor parties and spy. That's his service.
There should be a name for that dude.
Yeah.
Because I've known of a few bachelor parties where, like, the brother or the cousin rats out what happened after.
Benedict C. Block. Yes, turncoat. It's horrible.
It's really like it's you should go to prison.
I know.
If you tell anybody what happens at a bachelor party, you should go to jail for like 3 weeks.
I have decided that, you know, just like in the black community, there's an Uncle Tom, there's an Uncle Dude. There's the guy who rats out other dudes.
Interesting.
The guy who goes to bachelor parties and turns on his own dudes by telling. First mistake is he does this thing where he has this great open relationship with his wife or his girlfriend. Oh, man, we don't have secrets. Oh, we don't share. We share everything. Fine, except for your girlfriend's got a loud mouth. You share everything with her. I don't share as good a relationship with my wife. And then she tells. I've had this happen many times.
Girls will tell other girls. They will. They don't keep secrets.
So there's a guy who thinks his girl's really cool. He's like, I can tell you what went on. And then she immediately tells somebody else.
Quick tangent. Mm. There's a famous basketball NBA story about a team in the playoffs 1 year where one of the star players and one of the other starters turned out that they were banging the same chick.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of the stars, these guys weren't talking, and the third star told his wife, who then went and told the star's wife, and the whole team self-destructed.
Really?
Lost in the first round, and it was all because of Benedict Cockblock.
Yeah, it was James Worthy and A.C. Green.
No.
By the way, can you imagine James Worthy, who never stopped whoring, and A.C. Green, who was a virgin?
Oh, yeah. They
on the same team?
That Magic and Worthy must have spent years trying to get him to do something horrible.
Could you
years.
Imagine?
Day after day of just.
I'm surprised they even passed to him.
Yeah. I mean, they're actually probably roofing him, trying to get him to lose his virginity.
All right. So, Maid of Dishonor, Patrick Dempsey is the guy for hire. Again, like those horrible Dane Cook movies where he has some sort of business. His business is to date your ex-girlfriend and disappoint her, so you go back there. This is his business.
What was the first movie that did that?
It's kind of like Hitch.
I was going to say Picture Perfect with Jay Moore.
Yeah, it was one of those stupid ideas where this guy has a business. And so he charges you to go to the whatever. And, of course, again, he's a Benedict Cockblock, but he doesn't seem to care. He's got his ill-gotten gain. But eventually, of course, he has to fall in love with the bride of one of the guys he's working with. The girl, I mean, she hired him, and he falls in love because he finds out this guy really is a bad guy.
Well, because the chick flick, the basic chick flick premise is that the woman who's smoking hot but somehow can't find a boyfriend finally does find the boyfriend, but there's some sort of really nefarious catch.
Right. Yeah.
Some sort of catch that would never happen in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever been to a bachelor party, by the way?
Yes.
Where you don't want to get involved with the ugly stripper? Like, you ever get some really bad strippers at a bachelor party?
I'm at the point now, I think because I'm getting older and I had a daughter, where I actually get bummed out by strippers.
Well,
not if they're,
but not the hot ones.
No, not the hot ones.
Yeah,
I'm saying
the ones
where you're looking at them and you're thinking, like, this poor girl, like, she tried to do porn and wasn't cute enough to do it, and now she's here.
It's funny.
I start thinking about breaking it down. Where did her dad go wrong?
It's funny though. It's like watching what you eat when you don't like the food. That's not much of a challenge. But when your favorite dish is put in front of you, it's hard to stay away from it. I always feel bad for the scary, dancers or the hookers or whatever. Yeah, with bad tats and all that kind of stuff. But when they're young and hot, I immediately stop feeling bad.
Well, you know,
for
it's
them.
Funny, though, the U-porn premise also applies in strip joints because you'll have the guy who's just waiting for the perfect stripper.
Right.
And then you'll have the one who's just like, she's got kind of a hump, but
right.
And he's 3 minutes in, he's gone.
You know what I think? What I think they ought to do, actually, I'll get a little plug in. We're going out to dinner tomorrow night. We're going to this place where you essentially just eat an entire cow.
Yeah.
Called Foga de Chow. It's excellent. And they're paying me no money. It's just we're going there and eating tomorrow. They give you a card. It's a paddle. You put it in front of you. And you flip it over, it's like a coaster. When it's red, they stop bringing the meat. When you flip it over and it's green, they keep bringing the beef.
It's the Sal card.
Yeah. Cousin Sal plays
because,
it.
Because he won't turn the card over.
He's got too much pride, yeah.
And we're begging him to turn it over because it becomes a point after an hour you're worried about his welfare.
Yeah.
And he won't turn it over.
And when you hiccup and it tastes like a cow, eventually, you know, you've had too much cow. But he's got a lot of pride. And Jimmy will be there and the whole gang will be there. But the point is they should have that card system at the strip joint with, you know, like a lap dance in my refractory period,
like
just enjoying a beer. You know, because there's nothing – it feels weird when you've just got your honker ground down to a nub and you're like, I'm going to enjoy a Miller Lite and take a little break here for a minute. And then the chick comes by. Well, you want to dance? You're like – you feel bad. You know, just come try me back in 10. Let me buy my friend a dance. They should have the paddle. Turn it over. You know, one says refractory.
I love
period.
That idea, but the strip joint would never go for it because part of their money is based on the fact that if you leave a little opening for them with their chair, they will
right.
slide over like a cobra and
right.
just sit on you. And then they pray that you're just going to be,
yes,
you know, have too little pride to turn them down.
Also,
I found that the best trick is to basically push a whole bunch of chairs together. I call it the chair armada.
You essentially circle the chairs?
You basically build an offensive line around yourself with chairs, and they can't penetrate it.
David, it is funny when you see one of your friends who got the really ugly stripper, and you know he's just trying to be nice, and he's on his third lap dance, and you can see him sort of squirming. We went to a strip club in Vegas once. I went with David Alan Greer. His stripper had been stabbed 18 times by her ex-husband.
Oh, my
and
God.
And she proceeded to share that. I mean, it's like literally she took a sip of Coke and it started coming out of the holes in her side. It was really like a cartoon. And Dag wanted to get the hell out of there the whole time. But now you feel bad, too, and you got to start throwing the money around. And I've said this many times. I don't know if you have this feeling, but no matter how much I can be in the strip club making it rain like Pac-Man, but as soon as I go into the bathroom and there's the Ethiopian guy who wants to hand me a breath mint and get it 50 cents, I'm like, hey, dude, back off.
I have pride.
You know what? It's a tough economy. Meanwhile, I've been balling up 20s and trying to throw it into the crotch of the chicks on stage for the last 4 hours. And I just bought a chick a mini bottle of champagne for $72. But the poor Ethiopian guy in the bathroom, no eye contact. I don't want to give him a dollar.
If I had to eliminate five things from America, bathroom attendants would be in the top five.
Just the idea that there's essentially another witness to you taking a dump in the bathroom, just that alone.
Well, first of all, if you're at a place that is a bathroom attendant, odds are it's a nice restaurant or a strip joint or something. It's a place you're having fun.
Right.
You don't want to be thinking about this poor dude who's trapped in a bathroom smelling like somebody's shit the whole night, basically.
Right. And by the way,
it's depressing.
You take that home. Because, like, when I used to work at McDonald's and I worked the grill,
yeah,
my fingers smelled like onions and quarter pounders for a week.
Right.
You know, if you're in a bar that's smoky, your hair will smell like smoke, your sweatshirt will smell like smoke. So this guy must go home reeking of ass.
Yeah, he smells like kind of like a stale fart crossed with dog poop.
It's like, yeah, it's like, I smell Lavoris and ass on you and Brute.
I worked in the service industry, and I always overtip, but I will not do the bathroom.
All right, I'd like that guy out of the bathroom.
Yeah, just go.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's always a weird nationality, and there's this weird thing, too. If the guy hands you, once in a while you'll wash your hands, and you go reaching for the paper towels, and if he hands it to you before you can grab the paper towel, then you have to pay him. Well, if you take something from his hand.
There's two emotions at work. First, you feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you either don't like yourself because you didn't tip him,
mm-hmm.
or you're mad at yourself that you tipped him.
Right.
Either way, you're walking out there unhappy in two different ways.
I got another bathroom rule for you I was talking about on my radio show a few months back. I don't know if this has happened to you, but it happened to me two times in 3 days, which was first time I was at Dancing with the Stars. I went to go use the bathroom in the back of the stage. I walked into the bathroom, got myself up against the urinal, and heard from inside the stall a guy go, "How's it going?" And I was like, "Going good." And then there was a pause, and then I go, not a bad gig, getting paid to take a shit. And he goes, "Hey, I'm on the phone." It's like, oh, he's talking to a guy on the phone, and now I just seem like a maniac just talking to him about getting paid to take a shit. He was in the toilet with the door closed.
Oh, he was talking on the phone, and you thought he was talking.
I thought he was talking to me. Yeah. And then fast forward 3 days later, I'm at Larry's eating more beef with Kimmel. My back is to the door. I'm taking another piss, and a huge brother comes walking in. "What's up? How's it going?" "Going good. Having a good piss. I'm on the phone." You shouldn't be able to walk into a bathroom with a cell phone and have loud conversations when people's backs are turned to you, right?
Well, I think it's much weirder to be in the bowl on the cell phone.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
He's on the pod. His phone rang, obviously, a few minutes before I got there. He's having a conversation. I agree. But what are you supposed to do when you're taking a piss and from inside the stall you hear a guy go, "How's it going?"
That's pretty weird.
I thought the guy just recognized me, like he was a crew from Dancing with the Stars, or he saw my bedazzled jeans or something. And I wanted to be cool.
You didn't go to college, though. You missed out on, and I talked about this the other day on a podcast about how fucking disgusting the bathrooms are.
At college.
I mean, it's like you can't even begin to describe what it's like on like a Sunday. Mm-hmm. You're just like, "Yeah, I'm going to go take a pee." And like, stall one, covered in shit. Stall two, puke and shit. Right. Stall three, just puke. Really? Stall four, maybe I could wipe down the pee and sit down on it. Right. It would take about 20 minutes. Right. Those are your four options.
Right.
And that's what every weekend is like. And after a while, you're like, you just learn to just walk through these beer bottles and puke. And you don't
even
like think about
it. Is that like in a dorm?
Any dorm.
Yeah.
Any dorm. So I went on a podcast like, man, that was 20 years ago. I bet it's not like that now. Is it like that now? Can you email me? Million people email me. Oh, yeah, it's worse. Oh, telling me stories about, you know, standing accidentally on a condom in a shower. Like, just disgusting.
Worst,
it's like
the worst bathroom scene. I hope you guys are eating breakfast. The worst bathroom scene I've ever been involved with is flying Tower Air to New York.
Ooh.
Tower Air doesn't exist anymore. They didn't even have their own terminal or anything. You had to take a bus to the plane.
I've never heard of Tower Air.
There's a good reason why. They would park their plane like out on the tarmac, and you had to take a bus to it. That's number one. It was me and Kimmel flying to New York. K-Rock was footing the bill. And for another $12, we could have flown United, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But they decided to fly us Tower Air. What Tower Air did is they took 747s and they gutted them. They took all the business class and the first class out of there, and they filled them with more seats. And what people don't realize is a 747, you could put 500 people on a 747 if you gutted all the business and all the first class.
Which they did.
Which they did, and we sat on the tarmac for like 3 hours. By the way, the bathroom in the middle of the plane, by the time we got, half hour from JFK, it was Calcutta in there. I mean, it was that Slumdog Millionaire
outhouse
scene. I mean,
yeah.
It was an outhouse because it's 500 people,
yeah.
Three bathrooms, and we've all been on the plane for 10 and a half hours now.
Ugh.
Oh, bad time. And it was a flying porta potty. It was not even a plane at that point.
Do you find that they don't delve into the bathroom parts enough in Survivor?
I don't watch Survivor, but if I did.
I thought you did.
Oh, Survivor. I thought we were talking about Lost for some reason.
No, Survivor.
Yeah, there should be a lot more leaf ass wiping in that.
I think you screwed up your mic.
Sorry.
It seems like there would be at least three weird poop pee stories.
One would
think. Per episode.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I walked in somebody's stool last night. What the hell? I thought we had an agreement.
You'd think Probst would broach that, you know, when he was at one of the challenges.
Well, I was thinking, you know, they'll have the challenge where they haven't eaten for 4 days, and it's like, you win a breakfast buffet.
Right.
And everybody just chows down for an hour, and then they all look sick, and then I can't even imagine. It's like, holy hell, they have to unleash in the forest, right?
Well, forget about the forest. How about just all of you in a makeshift tent with a monsoon going on outside, and one guy's just got the farts?
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
I mean, just think about the gas from those, you know, some guy. Yeah. He's a pig farmer from North Dakota.
Right.
He's 300 pounds. He's, you know, he's lost control of his bowels, you know, many years ago. I mean, how would you like to be in the tent with that cat?
You know what else bothers me about Survivor? Throw the girls a razor after 2 weeks. Let them shave the armpits. I'm watching in HD now.
Don't give me
Survivor in HD and give me armpit hair on the hot blonde I'm thinking about.
How much extra boob and ass has Probe seen in his career?
That's what,
like, when the chicks go naked or the tops come flying off or the chicks they try to do their immunity challenge in their bra and panties, but the chicks got double D's.
They got a blurkler.
She's running the tire obstacle course and one boob comes flying out and hits her in the face. Jesus Christ.
There's two things I've never understood. One is why no former college basketball player at a big program has ever just come out and said, oh yeah, they paid me this, they paid this guy. There's like this code of omerta.
Right.
With college basketball and football players, and nobody's ever told what they got paid, even though we all. The second one is none of these Survivor editors or real world editors or any of these shows has ever just said, you know what, I'm going to burn myself a little disc of all the nudity and put it online. How has that not happened yet?
I have a crazy, I mean.
Donnie looks guilty.
The Weeze worked as an editor on Big Brother.
Oh, so you could have done that easily.
I mean, they had cameras in the toilets and stuff there. I mean, Donnie, how much nudity did you see in that editing bay?
Some, not as much as you think, but mostly everybody's like under the covers, like in Big Brother.
But what? But
in the bathroom, though, there was one guy, Josh, who would jerk off every night in the toilet, and knew that everybody was watching.
He's going to be our guest on Monday, by the way. We got to book this guy. So when you're editing the stuff together, do you have to watch that? I mean, how's that work?
You only really get to see it as it's live, because if there is some nudity, they don't load it in.
Right. Oh, okay.
Or if they need it for story,
they'll
load it in. And but
either way, somebody has to have a five-hour reel of all the great boobs and all the great asses.
Real world, they have sex for hours in the real world house, and they just kind of show a quick second of it, and then they pretend the tape doesn't exist.
Right.
But here's the other thing. We've met a lot of editors working on TV. Donnie, I think, is a higher-class editor.
Yeah.
There's some editors who look like they've never not had to pay for sex. I mean,
most editors. Let me give you the archetype for the editors. I mean, the standard issue editor looks like the original Buffalo Bill, from Manhunter, the first Silence of the Lambs.
Nice, not second Buffalo Bill, first Buffalo.
First Buffalo Bill from Manhunter. Look that one up. That is basically the template for editors.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that guy,
or it looks like the Hurley from Lost, like the 300 pounder with the mullet.
Yeah. Either way, those guys are paying for their loving, as Bill Simmons says, and they definitely got some kind of secret spank reel that they're not talking about.
And that's what drives me nuts is that. By now I should have been able to see 5 hours of sex footage from the real world.
Some guy whose, you know, career's over and he's PO'd at NBC or MTV or whatever should just throw that up on YouTube.
It'll happen.
I agree. Well,
I have faith.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Bet online. Sports are coming back. It just keeps opening up. It's nice, right? Here's your chance to bet on them with our exclusive partner, betonline.ag. MLB is back. NFL camps, they've reopened. NBA is in full swing now. Plus UFC, lots of UFC. UFC never really slowed down. Boxing, NASCAR. NASCAR's back too, yeah. No shortage of ways to get in on the action. Visit betonline.ag today to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of the welcome back sports bonuses. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at Podcast One. And don't forget promo code Podcast One for your free sign up bonus today.
And that was Adam and Bill Simmons. Bill making his first appearance on the Adam Carolla podcast on episode 5. Adam would occasionally go on Bill's show. And so he kind of, that was probably his biggest taste of what podcasting was when he would appear on Bill's show, because he didn't even know he was doing a podcast with a radio show.
Yeah, it was so weird because they would only tell him about streaming numbers, I think, because they didn't want to advertise the podcasting numbers, and streaming still feels like radio. Because it's like, oh, yeah, we're broadcasting. Look how big these streaming numbers are. It's like, yeah, but never mind that. He's number one on iTunes. Why are we telling him that? So Adam would go on Bill's podcast in 2007 when Bill had a very early ESPN podcast with a very terrible sound quality. But Adam would do his best, including, and it wasn't Adam's fault. They compressed it very low. But Adam even had to go as far as broadcasting from Bill's driveway on a cordless telephone while Bill was inside of his garage.
Right.
That's how very early and unprofessional it was. But at the time, Adam's radio show was a year into its podcast, but he still credits Bill as his first taste of podcasting.
Yep.
Oddly enough.
And then also another guest who appeared on Adam's radio show was comedian Larry Miller. And
a staple of the morning show. He doesn't date back to Loveline at all. It was just a morning show thing, and he's never left the network since.
Right. I mean, Larry Miller, we know him, Nighty Professor, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Pretty Woman, yeah.
Yeah, Pretty Woman, of course. So Larry comes on, and now whenever he comes on, we play the hypothetical road trip with him. And
that was a radio show staple, but early on the podcast just came on for the one-on-one. This is Adam Carolla Show, Episode 6 with Larry Miller.
My kids, I am going to ruin them because I had such a miserable childhood, and their childhood is so incredibly bountiful, and Daddy's just going to ruin them with all his horrible stories. But I remember just as a kid going to another kid's house and seeing the football helmet lamp on his end table and going, what the fuck? What? Is your dad, is he a 49er? No. How did the lamp, there's a lamp coming out of a 49er helmet. Jesus Christ. What do you do, mortgage the house? No, it's, I got that. Remember once in a while you just see something, there's a bed shaped like a race car. Holy shit.
Yeah, no,
Who's your dad, Howard Hughes? And then every once in a while it'd be one of these things where it's like, again, it was never, the Corollas had nothing. But once I go to someone's house and it's like, you'd see that crappy old timey looking like popcorn maker, like the one with the big wire wheels on it that was red, that looked kind of corny, but it was a popcorn thing and the dad would wheel. Jesus Christ. You gotta, I need a bag to breathe into. You don't have to go to the theater you got an old timey pop, you know, the gumball machine, or if God forbid, there'd always be that one guy whose dad had the slot machine that was parked in his den. Holy shit. I remember just like, now my kid's going to be driving a golf cart on the way to his giant. He's going to be driving a golf cart that's going to have the, you know, Rams helmet put on it, right? I mean, inside of his giant castle, inflatable castle. Like, this stuff didn't exist at home when we were kids, right? Yeah. You could go to an amusement park and see a gumball machine or a popcorn machine, but there's no such thing as any of this crap at home.
No. And
what's that, Donnie?
You know, we had the Mickey Mouse telephone in the apartment that freaked Mike out.
You had that as adults, though.
We had, yeah, Donnie.
Well, I brought it from
Donnie.
Quick
digression. When Donnie and I used to live in our first apartment in North Hollywood, it was on an alley. And I used to work on my car out of the garage in the alley. And an alley is essentially a funnel for misfits. There's a gravitational pull to alleys, where I do think like cops ought to just set up in the alley because it's like the drug addicts, the drifters, the grifters, the, you know, the second story guys, the guys are breaking into cars and stuff. They all just end up being sort of sucked toward the alley. I don't know, even if they're not doing anything wrong, they would prefer to walk through the alley as opposed to just the well lit Laurel Canyon Boulevard, where the apartment was on. And I'd just sit back there and work on my car, and there'd always be some guy come in and inevitably strike a conversation up with me. And I was naive and nice, and I had no self-esteem. And I was 20, 19. And the guy started talking to me, and if he said to me, like, hey, man, I just got to blow out my old lady, and I need a place to crash. You think I could come up and crash on the – I'd say, yeah, come on up, crash on the sofa. It was a one-bedroom. So there was a cement finisher named Mike who had no front teeth, who was one of these guys. I don't know if he had a wildly – I don't know if he had a wicked sense of humor, but he'd be like – he'd be one of these guys, you'd look in his straight face, he'd be like – he'd show up one day, maybe show up with like a black eye. Jesus, Mike, what happened? Geez, I don't know. Some guy punched me for no reason. What happened? I was just in a bar. I told him his wife's pussy stunk. The next thing you know, he's coming at me. But he's saying a matter-of-fact kind of way. And there's like, I didn't know if he was serious or not. So he drove a Ranchero, which is the poor man's El Camino.
Yep.
It's the Ford Ranchero. Yep. The driver's side door was caved in so that he had to climb out of the passenger side and crawl across the transmission hump and get out. One time.
By the way, first of all, naturally it was caved in because like his mouth.
Right.
He had to have a car
yes.
that someone just hit for no reason.
No reason.
Somebody
right.
just. And then this happened. Anyway, go ahead.
This guy literally, his brother lived in an apartment down the other alley. Remember that? I'm sure he's doing great today. He was a typewriter repairman. So his business, he's going gangbusters. That's recession proof, by the way. And so I remember one time, this is how out of it this guy Mike was. We pulled out in front of the Golden Chopstick, which was a cheap Chinese food place that was down Laurel Canyon after finishing. I don't know where the stories end, but we finished my grandmother's slab at her house when I was adding a kitchen on. We went over to the Golden Chopstick. This guy lived almost, he subsisted exclusively on pork fried rice. That was all he ate. So we're out front of the place. He's got the Ranchero with the door carved in. It's three shades of primer. He's crawling out of the passenger side door. He's covered up to his waist in concrete. You know, he's been finishing concrete. There's shit all over him. I'm covered with shit. The world's best-looking woman, for some reason, like out of a Survivor video, just goes walking down the sidewalk, just in a miniskirt, like an 80s video, just goes walking right past us, right back. And he says to me, he points at her from, you know, as we're crawling out of the Ranchero, he says, there's a, oh, Jesus, look at that piece of ass. We ought to talk to her. I said, Mike, I'm thinking, I didn't say anything, but it's like you're covered with, you have no front teeth, you're covered with cement, you're crawling out of a den in. Ranchero. I said, Mike, let's just grab the food and get back to grandma's house. And then he stopped and he looked at me very seriously and he goes, what's the matter? Don't you want any pussy? Thinking,
yeah,
I don't know if he thought I was gay at the time.
But you know what, though? In a way, consciously or unconsciously, he was right. And that's also a story about life, meaning, why not?
Right.
You, as you were saying, well, you're 19, you had no self-esteem. That kind of proves it. Here's a guy, no teeth, door's caved in, he's caved in, he's covered with crap, and he's still willing to say, so what are you, in school?
Right.
So what are you go to school around here?
Yeah.
Are you an actress? He's willing to give it a shot.
Somebody
wins the lottery.
He did a few things at our place. I said, Donnie, here's my buddy Mike, he's going to crash on the sofa. Donnie had a great...
I didn't even know. I just woke up and the guy was there.
Oh, you just came home, yeah. This guy did a few things. It was a couple good moments. One is, he was on the sofa. He wanted to use the phone. Donnie had a Mickey Mouse phone. Literally, it was Mickey Mouse. He put the phone under his arm. And it was one of these things where old meets new, because we're like, Mike, go ahead and use the phone. He's like, where's the phone? And Donnie's pointing at Mickey Mouse, and he's saying... It was a lamp phone. And he remember just going, what the fuck is this? And he's like, you're talking to Mickey's mouth or whatever it is. But at a certain point, this was like out of a movie. Like he's drunk and passed out on the sofa, sawing logs, like snoring like it's only a concrete contractor with a, you know, missing front teeth and drunk. And he's passed out. And Donnie and I are having one of those little spats in the hall. He's like, you know, Donnie.
Well, I wake up in the morning and there's this crusty looking guy sleeping on the sofa.
He's wearing his pants covered with concrete and stuff. And Donnie's giving me, get him out of here.
Who's this guy?
And I'm doing it. He's good people. And Donnie's going, I don't want this guy in my. And he's in the middle of the argument. He pops up, does that, hawks a loogie, and passes out again. And it was like out of a movie where right as I'm saying, he's a good guy. He's not going to cause any trouble. It's right when he gets up, blows the snot rocket out of his nose, and passes right back out again.
Well, Adam, you didn't tell me it was Cary Grant. I mean, now that I see what kind of quality people he is.
We'll use his ascot to get the loogie off the window later on. But, that was one of the many guys I used to run into in this alley. Don't hang out in alleys, kids.
Well, unless you're a contractor without teeth and you need a place to live. But by the way, we all have bathrooms. We're all people and we're all human. But when I think of someone like that, and I've known plenty of people, we gave someone like that also a place to live when in the first apartment I had when with the same idiot friends. You're there. We
right.
called him Easy Ed the Electrician. And he turned out he was interesting enough, but when you're that age, the age you describe, we
right.
think this makes us poets and young men of the world to say, oh, we're really living with people. We're really casting our net wide. We'll see who all humanity is interesting. But it turns out the guy was just, he was a big drinker and he was a big drug taker. He would take,
right.
he would take everything apart and we thought, and he's an electrician. This is so cool. He can fix anything. And you know what though? He never put anything back together after about 6-7 things
yeah.
over a month or so.
I know.
He would just take them apart and then pass out. And then we just had a lot of stuff on the floor. And finally, we said, you know what? You got to go. And he was fine. He had a place for a month. This is in New York, so it was cold, you know. And,
right.
And he got another place. These are the stories, by the way, that should end with one of those. And today, that man.
Yeah, except for this guy.
Is the governor of Illinois.
This guy was either beaten to death in prison or claimed by hepatitis. I mean, there's no way Mike can still be around. And by the way, there's a couple of funny things. You've been around long enough to have this realization when you realize, wait a minute, I'm older than that guy was
yeah,
then.
Right.
Like Donnie, you and I know we're older than Mike was then. Even though he seemed like a grizzled, salty merchant marine, we are now older than he was
most
then. We have our teeth, but he could have been 35 and just seemed he was haggard.
LifeLock 2019 data breach of MGM Resorts impacted more than 142 million hotel guests. That's right, the hackers took the data, put it for sale on the dark web, cybercrime marketplace, man. It's going for $2,900. That could be your information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info on the internet, and you're out there. Now, look, it's convenient. It's great. You're ordering things. You're ordering food. You're taking care of business. You're doing it all from the comfort and safety of your own home, but your info is out there. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
And that was Larry Miller talking about letting dirtbag guys live in your early apartments with Adam.
Yep, they both had some stories, and then Donnie chimed in a little bit. This is from March 1st, 2009. You worked with Larry Miller extensively while he was at the network with his own podcast. He still guest appears on the shows all the time.
Right.
He had his own podcast at the network for several years.
That's right, and it's so cool. I mean, he was one of the nicest guys I've ever worked with, and cares so much about comedy. Just hearing him talk about comedy, it's almost like a science for him, but there's so much passion mixed in, and it's so cool just to hear him talk about anything. And he loves his family so much. He's always talking about his family. If you know Larry, you meet his family. He's very proper and just old school, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, one time I've told this before, but he's taken me and another guy out, and we got hot shaves, put on some suits, and went and got martinis at Musso and Frank's. And that was our night out. So love Larry Miller. Love whenever he comes on. And yeah, just another Adam Carolla classic guest. Hall of Famer.
Indeed.
Now, speaking of classic guests, David Alan Greer. Now, he and Adam and Drew have a rich history dating all the way back to Loveline.
David Alan Greer started coming on in the late 90s. He appeared on the MTV show and then started coming on the radio show. And then he appeared so many times, he became the most recurring guest in the show's history. I think second was Bad Religion after him, a band. So he just came on the show all the time. And then he came on the morning show, and there's too many classic bits and moments to even begin to reference them. But in all of that, they never really got into Dag's childhood very much. And on this first episode of the podcast with Dag, Adam Carolla Show, Episode 7, from March 2nd, 2009, aired the following day, Adam asked Dag about his childhood, and they get into it. Check it out.
So you grew up, and I've never really completely gotten into it with you on your childhood. I want to know what turned you into the monster. You grew up in Detroit. Your dad was a psychologist. Your
psychiatrist.
Even
I correct
more.
You just because that is more intense. I mean, it's like
obviously.
Dr. Drew.
Yeah, they. Well, the difference for those of you who don't know is the psychiatrist can prescribe drugs.
Absolutely.
It's a much more schooling involved.
Especially back in the day. I mean, now it's kind of like you don't really – it's rare that people – if you go to a psychiatrist, you're really out there.
And what
you
was,
can get Zoloft from your GP now.
And what was your dad's story?
He – what do you mean? I mean, he was a psychiatrist. I mean, my parents separated when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
When he was 40 years old. Mm-hmm. It was 1965. So
huge afro.
What?
I mean, did your dad? Tell me if your dad did what Mike? Because my dad,
boy, he got a dashiki and a water.
That's what I'm saying.
but think about it. When I started reading it, he was about 40 years old.
Right.
And all my life, I was like, that was a shattering point. Like we had this great idyllic family. We'd go on family vacations. All of a sudden, dad up and left.
Right.
Now, when I look at the family pictures, the last three vacations of us when we went to Washington, D.C., you know, Yellowstone National Park, there's my father in this black stingy brim with black sunglasses. We're all, if I smiled any brighter, my head would explode.
Right.
Everyone but him is smiling.
Right.
He looks like he's kidnapped us and is ready to kill us.
Right.
So I can see now as a grown man that he was miserable. But I never saw it before.
I got to tell you, I, in my hallway, have a couple of pictures of my parents, what must be minutes before they decide to get divorced. And it's like, you know, you're sitting around the picnic table and everyone's turning toward the camera and smiling. Dag, you know what? You have to see this.
Oh, yeah.
I have
them just like you did.
You have to see it right now.
But did you ever notice it before?
No, but let me – all right, listen. Weezer, talk to everyone for 10 seconds. We're going to run downstairs. I got to show Dag this. Don't hit pause or anything. Just tell how we met, how long you've known me, our first apartment. Yeah, it's going to take 10 seconds. Here we go.
There we go. Hey, Lynette. Lynette just walked in. Okay, this is even better. Here we go. Lynette, put on one of the headsets, please. Oh, you guys are lucky now.
What's happening, Weezer?
Nothing, Lynette.
What's going on here?
Glad you walked in.
What's going on? Where are they going?
Adam wants to show Dag his family photos where his parents look like they're ready to kill each other.
Oh, I know the picture.
Yeah, so you got to look at it right now.
Oh, they look miserable. Yeah, Adam and his sister smiling big for the camera, sitting around a table by the pool.
Yeah.
And his mom just looks really sad.
Blank face.
And his dad with his big afro.
But it's not sad. It's blank. Their expression is blank.
It's not happy.
No.
What are we doing? We're not on right now, are we?
Yeah, yes, we are.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm very serious.
Why don't you hit
James
pause?
Dixon just walked in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
Baby doll.
So that interference you hear is him in a cell phone working away.
Oh, yeah. It's interfering.
Yeah.
All right. Here they come. Goodbye.
Okay. Thanks, Lynette.
Whew. All right. Dag's putting his cans back on. Dag, am I... Jesus Christ. Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, that's...
How
that's,
miserable did those two look?
That hits home. That hits home. I mean, we've all had that look, but not, you know, with the finality of that. It's
I
like,
mean, my mom is looking the... She's got her head cocked at 90 degrees. She's telling my grandma to fuck right
she's
off.
She's kind of looking at your dad like, well, how did this happen? I cannot believe this bastard is the father of my children.
I told my dad... I talked to my dad the other day. I said, Dad, you guys got divorced, and you didn't talk to each other for 10 years. You physically wouldn't come in the same room with each other. And I said, why didn't you ever at least, why weren't you at least civil? Right. You know, walk up to the door when you're dropping the kid off, do that sort of. You know what he said? He said, I don't know. And I said, I do know. I said, you were both embarrassed to see each other, like two fat people that hook up and fuck all night, and then they see each other at work the other day. The next day, they're embarrassed.
What happened to your dad? Did he have good fortune, bad fortune, or did he just kind of float after the divorce? I mean, did he win the lotto? Or?
Let me tell you about my dad's fortune. Here's how fucking poor my dad was.
Oh, God.
When my parents got divorced, they didn't even bother getting divorced because there was nothing to whack up. Oh. There was nothing. They were living in my grandparents' extra house in North Hollywood, the crappy rental that they didn't put any money into. They were letting them flop there. My dad was so destitute that he literally got into his 63 VW Bug and he went to crash at my grandparents' house. Not his parents. My mom's parents' house in North Hollywood, one bath, one bedroom, crashed out there because he had nowhere to go.
Were they still in the house?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Eventually, he got his shit together enough to get a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood.
How much a month?
Oh, was, you know, they paid him to keep the carpet held down.
Let me tell you this. My dad, when he left my mom, it was like 1966, 67. He lived in San Francisco. It was the hippest.
He went from Detroit to San Francisco.
The hippest, coolest city in the world for that period of time. Then he wrote this national best-selling book.
Really?
He was on TV. It's called Black Rage. You know, it's 1968. Why the Black Man's Angry. You know? And he became an expert with this black suit. And we would sit at home going, oh, my God, there's Daddy. You know, he's on the Merv Griffin with Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Oh, my God. Yeah, we could not believe it. Also, it was tinged with anger, resentment. This bastard made it out.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how you want to meet your ex. So that's probably why they didn't run into each other.
So your dad wrote Black Rage, went to San Francisco, and went to...
Top 10 bestseller. It was huge.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. So he was a media sensation. He's, you know, making money, hip, cool, banging chicks, going to orgies, and all this kind of crazy stuff.
Now, did your dad go through this phase? Because my dad, when he was with my mom, dressed like Fred McMurray dressed on My Three Sons. He had a brown suit, brown patent leather shoes, and he looked like a low-level IBM executive. And then all of a sudden they got divorced, and it was like 1973, and my dad looked like the lead singer from Boston.
Same
grew huge afro. And I showed you a picture of my dad. He was rocking a massive afro. He's wearing the jeans that lace up in the front and in the back. He's got some platform shoes. And he's got clear glasses, not prescription, just clear glasses. Right. He's giving everyone, give me 10, give me 5, you know. All of a sudden, he's turning into the hippest cat in town.
Well, he's a musician, too.
And he's trying to get laid, basically. Yes. And he's got to, you know, he's got to blow the dust off that old road and get out there. Well, Did your dad do that?
Well, my dad, when we went to visit him, he had this apartment in San Francisco. And we found this big dashiki. Mm-hmm. He had a dashiki. And then...
That's my bad now.
Oh, boy.
I threw the phone out the window last time it went off when Lynette did it. Wow. All right, sorry.
Okay, so we went to visit my dad. This is 1968, I think. So this is the summer of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a dashiki. And the dashiki was back in the day, you know, back in the 60s. That's when, like, all the black people were, like, dressing this, the big African thing. It's a signature piece of clothing from the 60s.
Right.
So he had a dashiki, and he had a waterbed. Mm-hmm. So those two things were like, oh, holy shit. We have broken arrow. We have a broken arrow here.
Dance lost.
Oh, yeah. But I really wanted to live with them because it was just, he was in San Francisco.
Well, did your dad... Was he always that way? Was he always sort of militant? I mean, that's
No, because I think that, you know, I think he was who he was, but you have to remember in 68, in 67, 68, 69, like in Detroit, when the Black Panthers, political talk, white or black, was sexy. I mean, that was like foreplay. You had to come and be able to rap and talk about, you know, the
Exactly. Right, you know, wait, this what? Repressive government is, you know, social and physiological genocide on my people. I mean, that was like sexy. You know, that was cool. What? You wanted to be able to, faster you could rap and quote Mao Zedong, all that right. stuff. That was of the day. I mean, that's what you wanted
what
to do.
What percentage of those guys were just trying to get laid?
98%.
98%.
Yeah, 99%.
Because it's always weird when it's like, hey, man, I was marching
yes.
right along. I was there. I was there in San Francisco. We're in Golden Gate Park. Yeah. I was right there with the black. Yeah, we were, you're right there trying to get laid is what you're, well, you're trying to yeah. do.
And that was cool. I mean, I really wanted to be – I'm writing this book. And I remember I ran into a friend that I grew up with, Ronnie Livingston. He reminded me, man, we were 15 years old, and we walked all the way to the office of the Black Panther Party in Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. It was riddled with bullets. Mm-hmm. You know, there had been shootouts, all kind of crazy. Stuff. My mom was scared to death. I mean, I was like joining the Hell's Angels.
Right.
And they said, brother, you're too young, you know, to mm-hmm. be politically active just yet. When you turn 16, then you can take that oath and come back and be a Black Panther.
So, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we went back home and we were like all laughing about it and stuff. But at the time, in the day, that was considered.
Well, did you think
stuff.
That was a route you were going to go? I mean, following your dad's footsteps?
Well, no, because, again, my father's book, if you read it, it's more clinical and historical. And it unfortunately, I think it was used in a way that he never really intended it, which was like Colin Ferguson used the Black Rage defense. Mm-hmm. And that's really not what my father wrote the book so
yeah,
that
he went
lunatic
on the
of color
right.
could shoot up half of the Long Island Railroad and then use right. the Black Rage. That he was angry because his forefathers were slaves. That's why he shot up, you know.
Well,
maybe, train. I don't think that's
maybe,
really what he was
doing. Maybe being the only Black guy on the planet named Colin was enough.
And he defended
and
himself.
And he defended yeah. himself. That's yeah. always yeah. a good move, yeah. especially during
I'm out of order, Your Honor. I recuse myself. Yeah. Well, anyway, he told me that. Because he could have made a lot. I mean, he could have made a lot of money. I mean, that's a whole career.
Right.
Just being like a psychiatrist.
There
and,
you go.
And, you know, going around the country and being that paid expert. And,
right.
and defending every lunatic Black dude who did something crazy. And so he didn't want to do that. That's not really what he wrote the book for, but it became that kind of thing to some, yeah.
Right. And now your dad's still alive?
Yes, 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 he is.
And where's he living?
He's living in Encinitas, right outside. I shouldn't say, because but anyway, he's living right outside San Diego. I'm not saying exactly. Where.
And how is he with your career and your success? Does he have a sense of humor? He sounds like a real card, this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, I'll put it like this. My father is, to me, when I was growing up, he was very intimidating. Like, I just, you know, for a lot of boys, a lot of men, maybe not for you, I really spent a lot of time being scared to death of my father.
Uh-huh.
He never hit me. He never yelled at me. He was just intimidating. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he was the smartest, still is the smartest man I've ever met. And he's intimidating. I'll put it like this. I did a play in New York with Charles Dutton. Now, Charles Dutton
yeah.
served time in the joint.
Oh, he told me all about it.
Oh, yeah. He took a life or two, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He met my father.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and he was like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
Charles is very intimidating.
Charles Dutton's a real deal.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
not, he's, you know, he's not one of these rappers that
nope.
grew up in Burbank but pretends okay. like he's from South Central. He did time.
Oh,
he
yeah.
killed guys. He fought it out with prison guards
yeah.
and gangbangers. I mean,
oh, yeah.
he had a crazy hardcore life. So
yeah.
if he's intimidated
he was,
by Pops.
Yeah. yeah, he was intimidated by Pops when my father came to a rehearsal at the Public Theater. When
mm-hmm.
we were doing Richard III. So I'll leave that out there for you. When he was in his prime, he's old now, you know,
mm-hmm.
like an old lion.
Right.
But he still is, he will hold court and talk ad infinitum about.
Is he intense?
He is now, but, you know, now he's old. So he's like the old dog that used to be, you know, that killer Rottweiler.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now he farts a lot and he's
right.
kind of, you know.
And
slips.
What's he, and stuff like, will he give it up? To you, you know, will he call you and tell you he's proud of you?
He has. I mean, it's like this. It's like this, Adam. Part of growing up, at least for me, was for a long time, I wanted that. You know, I wanted that, hey, I really screwed up want to, you know, apologize for doing some things that were
right.
really fucked. You know, I'm, I got to the point now where I realized, because I have friends whose fathers were there,
right,
and it was worse than anything I went through. I'm serious. I mean, they were fought it out.
No,
they, you know, they're butted heads, and I really came to the conclusion, I don't know how much better off our relationship would be had he stayed. Because for a long period, when I was like 15, 16, 17, I could get away with shit because it was just me and my mom.
Right.
You know, you could get away with stuff with your mom. I remember I broke into the house to get back in because my mom locked all the doors and put the burglar alarm off because she said, I told you not to go out.
Right.
So I snuck out of the basement window. Mm-hmm. Then I had to break back in and act like I was asleep, but clearly there was a window open.
Right.
Yeah, so I, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
Well, where now, I don't mean where, but as far as your sense of humor,
right?
I can't figure out whether it's nature or nurture
right.
or a little bit of each. Did you always know what you were going to be doing,
no.
or were you always this way? And
I
when
think
you look
I was,
back on yourself
yeah.
now as an adult,
right.
was it pretty clear where you were heading?
I think as an adult, but I just hadn't found my venue because, you know, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was like 10, I was like showing my mom shoes, and I was like, why can't I get those shoes, Mom? And she was like, what shoes? And I pointed to these silver platform boots with a rainbow on mm-hmm. the heel. And we were in Berkeley, California, and my mom just looked at me like, wow. This is really serious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She was like, why would you want to dress like that? And I was like, because it's cool.
But you always sung, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be like a rock star. I wanted to be that kind of stuff. And then it turned into acting, and then it became comedy. I was not one of these kids who was like doing tricks and wanting to be a comic when I was a kid. I didn't know anything. I mean, I thought when I was in high school, the only gay dudes did like Godspell.
Right.
No, I was doing acid and smoking dope and going to concerts and being a fuck off. You know.
Right.
Acting, that was really gay.
But let me ask you this about comedy, and I don't know if you can answer this or not because I don't know if you've ever thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, you're just a really good actor.
Thank you.
And you can act funny. Do you act funny intentionally or are you funny?
No, I think I am funny. I think I am, but it's something I discovered along with a lot of people want to act and they're terrible. We've all seen them, we've known
right.
them, we've lived with them, sometimes we've married them.
Yes.
Where you have to sit these people down and say, dude, or ma'am, or whoever you are, you have no fucking talent. So it was something I wanted to do, and then as I pursued it, I discovered this talent. And I the comedy part came later, because for the first half or most of my career, I wanted to be like, you know, the Negro doctor on the show, you know, the
right.
black lawyer. The comedy stuff just came out. I mean, but I would do stuff. You know, and you find out that's funny. I remember when we did Loveline and the first time I did the vomiting thing,
mm-hmm.
and for people, I tell people that ask me, you and Dr. Drew were laughing so hard, and Dr. Drew, there were tears coming out of his eyes. He took his headphones off and he threw them across the room. And it's something I always did.
Right.
It's something I always did, but your girlfriend's not going to give it up like that.
Right.
You know, my ex-wife wasn't like, oh, my God. You know, that was, like I said, I did it and then discovered that was funny.
The thing that's funny about Dr. Drew is he loves ass and vomit humor, which is weird. Well, I agree, but it's funny that a man who we have to
yes.
say doctor in front of his
yes.
name would love ass humor as much as he loves ass humor. But yes, he loved that. So it is something that you discovered along
yes.
the way.
Yes, and I will tell you this. As a kid, I was always a class clown.
Right.
I was a class clown in class. And I remember being very young and this girl coming up to me in like third or fourth grade saying, make my friend laugh because he's really sad, you know,
mm-hmm.
like as kids. So I guess, yeah, I was always, you know, the class clown. I mean,
it's funny because we were talking about doing this sitcom and previous podcast.
Whoa.
And I was talking about getting Dag involved with the sitcom. And as I've been going through these progressions of meeting showrunners and directors and writers, I've been noticing a theme, which is the comedians and the people that are in comedy are some of the most fucked up, morose, serious
yes.
people on the goddamn
yes.
planet. And it's I mean, you can do the math, painful yes. childhood, tears of a clown, and all that yes. kind of stuff. But even just personally, some yes. of the biggest a-holes, and by the way, self-important a-holes.
Oh, I would ask you. I remember even as a comic, you know, coming on, I always ask about people who I think are brilliant and funny, and invariably, oh, yeah, well. He's kind of a dick.
Well, when they say the name twice.
Yeah.
Like they do that all the time. Yeah. They go, Donnie, salt of the earth, great guy. The guy helped you. David, you know, David is, he's your best buddy. You go into a dark alley, you want David behind you. Adam, you know, Adam's Adam. Just say the name twice. That's why I tell people all the time. Say the name twice and we'll know. We'll do the a-hole math on that.
Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies, 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? Let's get to getting, man. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Save that 15%, and you should be with Geico anyway. You'd be saving already. And then the 15 on top of that. At Geico.com.
And that was David Alan Greer, also known as DAG, back in 2009, making his first Adam Carolla Show appearance. He would go on to make many more. Even on the Adam and Drew Show, he would appear there as well.
And in the future, we'll probably make some more as well.
Yeah, I hope so. For those who don't know, they had a little bit of a falling out, whereas DAG does not want to come on the show anymore. He's made it publicly known. But hopefully they can bury that hatchet because we love
him. Very similar to what he did to Dr. Drew for the better part of a decade after Loveline as well. So we'll see how this all plays out. But
yeah.
My money's on. You'll hear Dag on the show again.
Me too.
And if not, we'll just keep playing them classics forever. So.
Yeah, I'm not.
Can't take that away, Dag.
That's right. I'm not giving up on him either. All right. Now, let's get going with another clip. This one features the first big celebrity other than Adam that I encountered while working on the podcast. This is not the episode, but it's Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan came on episode 46 of the show back in April of 2009.
It was his first appearance. He also appeared on these live stand-up, essentially versions of the live podcast they do now, but it was a little more stand-up-y. And he was super confused by that live show, which it was sold on iTunes as part of an album. It wasn't released as one of the podcasts. And so this is like his only appearance on his earliest appearance on the actual podcast, one-on-one format. Adam Carolla Show 46, Joe Rogan, April 21st, 2009. Adam asks him straight up about his political views, which is interesting to hear in 2009. And then it trails off when he talks about his take on addiction, which goes into a recent misquote, which we can talk about on the back end. Check it out.
Where does that, speaking of politics then, where do you come down?
I think it's all fake. You know, I think the system is almost unfixable. It's almost so corrupt. It's like a house with a foundation that's so rotten from termites. It's like, what are you going to do with this thing? Like, really, what you should do is chop this down and build a new house.
But couldn't we do that if everybody got their act together? And
man,
go
but
vote
that's what's the problem is everybody's got a fucking mortgage and a house and a job and bills and their own bullshit to deal with, and they have their softball league they're worrying about. To actually get together and reorganize and restructure our government in a fair way. Man, you know, and then who's to say how much control do we need over the people? How much, you know, do we need the FBI? How much do we need the NSA? Do we need the CIA? What do we need? Do we need the Federal Reserve? How much taxes do we need? Where are we going to get it from? Like, fuck, you know, it's, I mean, I think everybody, if we felt like the system was fair and that there was no corruption and that it was all geared towards, you know, making everybody live a more prosperous, healthy life, maybe you could get more people interested. But at this point in time, it seems like the whole system has been stolen. It's been stolen by special interest groups and gigantic corporations. And
but
what they're doing...
brainwashing
nobody,
us to vote a certain way or not
what's
vote?
That?
No, well, what are our choices? I think government is almost like Vegas in that in that it started off as... you know, handful of mobsters wanting to create a cool place to go do some gambling. And next thing you know, we have a 1/5 scale of the Statue of Liberty and a roller coaster going around everything and 300-story skyscrapers everywhere. And
and the Patriot Act.
And everything is bigger. Like if you think about life, think about Vegas, think about our society, think about pro sports, think about where the NBA was 25 years ago or 40 years ago, where the NFL was. You know, have you seen the new Dallas Cowboys Stadium? $2 billion, a jumbotron in the middle of it that's like 110 feet long. I laugh because they're bragging. Jerry Jones is like, it's the biggest television on earth. Like, great, I just paid $300 for tickets so I could go to the stadium and then stare up at the jumbotron. Does anyone else see the irony in paying $20 for parking, $500 for scalp tickets, $9 for a Miller Lite, and I sit in my seat and my head actually goes up at a 45-degree angle while the game is going on underneath the giant jumbotron? But how can we not get bigger? You know what I mean? I mean, think about that concept of just... We're humans. We evolve. Mm-hmm. Nothing stays the same. Cars keep getting bigger and safer and faster and more airbags and blah, and the game keeps getting bigger and faster and everything. And we're saying to government, you slow down.
Right.
Vegas will get bigger. The NFL will get bigger. Cars will get bigger. Everything will get bigger, but not you. You reel it in. You tighten it up. And they're like, fuck that. We're getting bigger, too.
Right.
And that's essentially what's happened. Now, I don't know when the weight of it becomes so great that it folds on itself.
It seems to happen with every empire. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be all about. That's what Rome, that's what happened to Egypt, that's what happened to Greece. I mean, it happens to every empire. I mean, we think, you know, that's the supposition. Right?
Well, they ain't here now, so something happened. And I definitely saw a Russell Crowe movie or two where they were around and ain't around anymore.
You know, it's interesting.
I think there's only one way you're going to get the government to have a more balanced approach. You know, the idea that it's this gigantic, huge entity that's, you know, just taking all this money and doing all these corrupt things and starting all these wars that are unnecessary. The only way is psychedelics. That's the only way.
Really?
Legalize psychedelics through the whole country, and it would change everyone's attitudes, including politicians. The only reason why these guys are doing all this crazy shit is because they're not tripping. There's no one who would start fake wars for no reason. The Gulf of Tonkin incident or the Northwoods document. Are you aware of that?
No.
The Northwoods document's from 1962. It was signed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and vetoed by Kennedy. And it was a plan for attacks on American civilians. They were going to blame it on the Cubans in order to get people riled up for a war against Cuba. They were going to blow up airliners, attack students. They were going to do all this shit. It's signed by the fucking Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1962. The only reason why those guys did that is because they weren't getting high. If you were doing mushrooms, if you were tripping, you would go, "Why am I? I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to do that."
I know it sounds semi-ridiculous to a lot of people that are listening, but really the only way, like we discussed earlier, to step off this treadmill known as society and the goals we have, and the goals aren't always good, because like their goal was we got to take Cuba down, but we need a good excuse to take
Cuba down.
So
they were going to kill Americans.
So let's kill a few co-eds. Yeah, dropping a little acid or taking some mushrooms will simultaneously knock everything out of focus and into focus at the same time.
The way I describe it, I say that a heavy psychedelic experience is like pressing Control Alt Delete for your brain. Mm-hmm. And your brain reboots, and now you have a fresh new desktop. And there's one folder on the whole desktop, and that folder is labeled My Old Bullshit.
Right.
And so then you have to like start and think, how am I going to live my life? Am I going to live my life through this predetermined pattern of behavior that I've established over my 30-plus years of living? Or am I going to reevaluate and try to take a new approach and try to live a more harmonious life, a more open-minded life, a more healthy and friendly life? And you know, where am I going to realize that doing bad things to other people and starting fucking wars and crazy shit like that? Like, that comes back to you, you know? The one thing that I really like about Obama is I don't know, you know, what his plan is. I don't know how much, you know, in debt he is to special interest groups and corporations that got him in place. But I love the way he's going to all these countries and trying to like cool shit off.
Trying to
like,
put
let's
his
just
cool
talk,
foot forward.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and
very measured approach.
I agree, you know, just this whole notion that the one guy spent $250 million, and the other guy spent $150 million, and the guy who spends the $250 million gets elected, and where did he get the money? Obviously, the system is horribly, horribly flawed, and it's insane that people don't understand just the general business concept of businesses don't give money away.
Yeah.
They either buy, they give, here's what businesses do. When they spend money, I mean, they're in the business of making money, but when they spend money, they go, we're going to buy a new fleet of trucks. So, yes, it's $5 million, but we'll have new trucks, and that's going to save us money. The idea that they would just give a politician, local or not, or national, here's a bunch of money that we'll never see again and we'll don't expect any return on our investment is totally insane.
It's insane.
The second they stop getting a return on their investment is the day contributions would end.
They're addicted to funny money. They're all addicted to it. They're all addicted to corruption. Every single party, every single politician, there's no exceptions. Maybe Ron Paul, and maybe that's why they laughed him off in the very beginning.
Right.
You know, what he's talking about is a complete restructuring of the federal government. He's talking about that the IRS is ridiculous and it's illegal and unconstitutional and that should be we should get rid of it. We shouldn't be acting as a nanny to other countries. We should get out of Iraq, get out of every other country, and concentrate on our own country.
Well, what do you think about this, Joe Rogan? I'm just resetting. I have this theory, you know, when it comes to these other countries, and we're kind of talking about civilizations and that kind of stuff. And it'd be nice if we're in that deprivation tank together when I lay this one out. But you know, when you see those movies and they talk about, like, they build a time machine and they go, you can go back in time, but you cannot disturb anything. Don't touch anything, because even if you break a twig or step on a snail, you could alter the events of the future. And, you know, it always sort of makes sense as a viewer. Like, you're like, all right, you can go back in time, but you can only observe, you know. I feel like when it comes to other countries, Africa, for instance, that continent, many parts of that continent, were essentially driving themselves toward extinction, essentially. Like, just literally raping, AIDSing, fucking... AIDSing themselves to death. I really do.
And terrible problems over there.
What we did is we went, you know what? We're not going to let that happen. We're going to drop off some grains of rice. Millions of grains of rice or wheat or whatever we're dropping off over there. And then we start establishing all these funds and all these things, and we start essentially going, you're not going to die. We're plugging you into the ventilator. We're going to keep the life support, and we're going to keep it going. Now, we didn't really get too much into the, hey, put a condom on, and we didn't get too much into the other facets of it, but we got a lot into, here's some grain. This will keep you alive. Well, now it's kept everyone alive long enough to do a little more raping, a little more AIDS, and a little more fucking. And now things are kind of no better than they were 50 years ago when we started dropping off relief packets over there. There's a part of me that thinks, let them go. Like, if they want to die, this is evolution.
They certainly don't want to die.
Well, they don't want to die. I know they don't want to die, but I mean...
But you're absolutely right that food is not going to fix anything. They have a cultural problem.
Yeah, they're going to give them the energy to fuck some more.
Yeah.
Right.
That's all that's going to happen.
And so my feeling is if you're going to drop anything off over there, drop a couple of condoms and, you know... And some birth control, the morning after pill, and then drop a sack of weed off.
What they really need is education and guidance and some way of making a sustainable civilization. You know, I mean, so much of the culture, you know, that they have down there is white man's culture. You know, they have these Christian missionaries that are coming into Africa, and then they have huge problems with people claiming that people are possessed by witches and demons. And so there's thousands of children that are being beaten and tortured and even murdered because their parents are convinced that these children are witches.
But
I mean, they're fucked up, man. They need education.
Well, they need education. I completely agree.
But I do agree
with
what you're saying objectively.
And there's like ethnic cleansing in Darfur and all that kind of shit going on. So it's like, you're talking about Ron Paul wanting to kind of pack it in.
Right.
But what do you do? Just let the Somalians go at it and fend for themselves?
It's a good question. I don't think either one is right. You know, I don't think, you know, interventionalist policies or, you know, getting involved in every single aspect of all these countries, I don't think they do that to help those countries. I think most of the times they do that to profit. You know, if you read, like, Confessions of an Economic Hitman or, you know, any books that talk about, you know, how we do business with other countries, mm-hmm. you know, it's like we're not doing it because we like them. You know, we're not doing it because we want to make these Africans feel better about things. We're doing it because we're trying to make money off them, and we're exploiting the fact that we can, you know, use their countries to do fucked up shit to them that we can't do over here because, you know, environmental people will stop it.
And do you think, and this will be my last question for Joe, we got to wrap it up in a few minutes. We were talking about societies having a lifespan no different than a human being, the aforementioned orca or dog.
Or even a planet. Or, I mean, everything
or a
goes
planet.
In cycles.
Like, everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And for human beings, it's 80 years. And for dogs, it's 12 years. And for giant tortoises, it's 112 years. And for Greece or for Rome or for Mayan Indians or Incas or whatever, they had a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm. Now, we've broken off into separate societies, and we might be hitting a midlife crisis as the United States while Africa is winding it up.
Right, like, right.
I mean, are they in a different phase? Are they like, are we going to go visit our old grandmother Africa and say, hey, here's your fruit basket?
And as we become more connected because of the internet, because of the instantaneous delivery of information, the fact that you can get on a plane and just go to Europe in 6 hours, the fact that we ship things and we're connected to all over the country, we're almost dealing with a one-world culture. And that's it's getting very close to that. So then what happens? You know, maybe it's a natural thing. Maybe a fucking meteor comes down. Maybe that's what meteors are. Maybe they're the inoculation, you know, that the planet uses to get rid of the bad virus of humans when it gets too crazy. So just send down a giant rock and fuck everything up.
It's like a...
There's a lot of people that believe that that's what happened. And that's what gigantic structures like the pyramids and that we don't understand. That these structures are indicative of a gigantic advanced culture that lived a long time ago that was wiped out by some sort of a cataclysmic natural disaster. And there's a lot of it is connected to mass extinction on the planet. That's real scientific, like the death of the woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers. All that shit happened about 10,000 years ago. And at that time, most of North America, a big chunk of North America, was under like a mile of ice. And something knocked the ice off that shit. Something, you know, changed the climate. It killed all the saber-toothed tigers, all the woolly mammoths, a bunch of other different species. And the end of that period, the Pleistocene period, they believe, there's a lot of scientists that believe that was some sort of a meteor. Something happened.
Joe's watched a lot of National Geographic.
Oh, dude, I love Science Channel, man.
I love it too.
History Channel.
And, you know, it is one of
good
those
TV.
Things. It's like when the assholes announce, I don't have a television. I'm always like, fuck you,
fuck
dick.
Yeah, it's like, I don't use email.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you, Kate?
Yeah, I don't have, but they always announce, I don't have television. And I know what you're saying. You're basically saying, I'm sitting there with a drool bucket, a wind-up beanie, watching Reba. And jacking off. Fuck you. There's plenty of good shit on the History Channel.
It's great
shit. I've got more education from watching Modern Marvels and all the rest of that shit and all that how it's made shit than I got. And a thousand hours of classroom time. And by the way, jack offs who are constantly doing that, I don't have a TV or I don't let my kids watch TV. When you were in school, they would show you a film. And they showed you a film in biology, and you'd go, oh, that's what an amoeba looks like under an electron microscope. They had films in school. Now we're just at home watching Mike Rowe is hosting or Joe Rogan's hosting, and it's slightly more interesting, but it's the same thing. You guys were okay with the films at school, weren't you?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's evolution. You know, the mass media is evolution. I mean, sure, there's going to be people exploiting it, and there's going to be bullshit in it, and there's a lot of mediocrity going on with it, but there's also some incredible shit.
You know, TV is also like drugs, though. If you legalize drugs, because there's horrible bad TV that people get addicted to, and then there's great.
But people get addicted to everything, man. TV. People get addicted to cheeseburgers. People are retarded. You know, they get addicted to jerking off. There's people that are addicted.
Whoa.
They jerk off 5-6 times a day. They can't stop.
Well, you know.
That's a You're sick right. day for Donnie. We don't have time to tell the story about when I threw my buddy Jay, my assistant Jay, the keys to the All warehouse right. and told him to go grab something, and Donnie was here.
What if my mom's listening? On.
Oh, you were working it?
It was.
What if my daughter's archiving?
We don't have
this
time
episode.
To tell that story, but let's just say Donnie, the computer was on and Donnie was here, and that's about all we can say. All right.
No one should feel unsafe at home, period. Fear has no place in your home, and that's why they're Simply Safe. They want to keep you safe. That's been their mission since day one. Protect your home. Do it today. Free shipping as well. Simply Safe. Two eyes, simplysafe.com/Adam.
And that was Joe Rogan making his first Corolla Show appearance back in 2009 in episode 46. Now, Gio,
yep.
what do you want to say about that?
Well, recently he was taking the media storm about his take on video games being addictive. People are leaving out that he was talking about himself. He was addicted to video games. He used to spend $20,000 a month on a T1 internet line in the 90s so he could play Quake from his house fast. So, like, he knows what it is. And so when he's talking about that, people are like, oh, Joe's an idiot. He doesn't know anything about video games. Like, no. He knows video games all too well, so that he's an expert on that. And in this clip, he's kind of a better version of than the soundbite that's been floating around. He's so eloquent in this. And it's an interesting time because this is from 2009, before the Joe Rogan Experience existed. So I've been actually a Joe Rogan fan since before I knew a Corolla, because he had this show Hardball that was on Fox. And he always calls it terrible, and it wasn't that great. He was a baseball player. That's the first thing I saw him on. Then, of course, I followed him on news radio. And then the very first episode of Loveline, the radio show, when it was in my area, when I could hear it live, Joe Rogan actually appeared on that episode of all people. And so I've been following his career. I heard every episode of the podcast. He actually credits this very appearance. He changes his story to flatter different people who have been kind to him over the years and showed him how they do streaming. But based on the timeline of events and what he was already doing Justin TV and other online video stuff, this episode is actually what got him to start the JRE. And he would go on to say that for many years, and now he just credits Adam as one of the people who got him to start. But it was Adam's explosion in podcasting that made the JRE possible, and without that, we wouldn't have Joe Rogan's podcast, if you're a fan of that show.
That's right.
So, thanks, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, he still... I've heard a recent interview where he credits Adam Carolla for sparking the idea of starting his own podcast, so...
Yeah, it depends on which day you catch him, which interview. I've heard every single thing he's ever done, so...
Right.
I got good tabs on all of it. But the most accurate timeline of events are a bunch of other people inspired him, and then he saw what Adam Carolla was doing, and then they started the podcast up with Red Band.
There you go. So that is Joe Rogan on The Adam Carolla Show. All right, that'll do it for today's Corolla Classics, but we'll keep the trip down memory lane going with this this nice little nugget of Adam Carolla Show history that we have planned for you during the break. So we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, my name's Chris Loxamana. That's Super Fan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.